Caring Review, print speaking to the blind, celebrating 40 years of audio newspaper production. Welcome to this week's edition of the Glasgow Times podcast, recorded at the Bishop Briggs Media Centre by our amazing volunteers. You can get in touch with us via Facebook, Twitter or Instagram using @QNReview, that is @CUENDREVIEW. You can also contact us directly by emailing information@qnreview.com. That is information@CUENDREVIEW.com. Or by calling 0141 772 3976. That's 0141 772 3976.
From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 8th of March, from the news section, Arnold Clark's son in £1 million divorce settlement, report by James Mulholland. A son of motor magnate Arnold Clark, who was allegedly very tight with his money, has ended his marriage with a divorce settlement in excess of £1 million. John Arnold Clark, 51, was ordered to give his estranged wife Gillian the sum following the proceedings at the Court of Session in Edinburgh. The court heard how the couple were married in November 2005, but they had separated in January 2022. In a written judgment published by the court yesterday, Lady Carmichael wrote of how Gillian estimated her grocery bill at £1,000 per week and that she spent £2,000 a month on clothes. She said that she drove an £80,000 Alfa Romeo car. The court also heard that she had a preference for self-employment because getting a job on an employed basis was something that other people did. Mrs. Clark also said she had enjoyed that luxurious lifestyle and that she would require a substantial periodical allowance. The court heard that Mr. Clark at times provided her with £10,000 in cash per month and that she had access to credit cards. She said they had also spent up to £20,000 on a single holiday. Mr. Clark, a dad of three, also told the court that he reckoned he spent £24,596 each month in total outgoings for his family. Speaking about Mrs. Clark's evidence, Lady Carmichael wrote, she also described Mr. Clark as very tight with his money and said that he exerted control over her by virtue of his decisions about spending. She acknowledged that she had been unhappy because he was unwilling to spend money. She referred to him as tight in relation to his decisions to take scheduled flights rather than using private jets and to decline to buy her a watch that cost £30,000. However, Lady Carmichael found that there was no evidence that Mr. Clark did anything wrong. She added, I entirely accept that financial control and abuse cannot and do occur in context of significant wealth. One party may earn and control funds and unreasonably limit the access of the other party to those funds in order to keep them in a position of subjection, to coerce them into tolerating other forms of abuse, or into behaving in particular ways. The evidence does not support the proposition that occurred in this case. While I accept that Mrs. Clark would have liked Mr. Clark to spend more money than he did, Mrs. Clark's own evidence demonstrates that this is not a situation in which Mr. Clark sought to control or coerce her to behave in a particular way, by restricting her access to funds, or placing conditions, particularly unreasonable conditions, on her access to funds. Mrs. Clark also gave evidence and submitted that the sums paid in relation to alimony since separation were a means by which Mr. Clark exercised financial control over her. The provision has in fact been reasonably generous. The total alimony directed to Mrs. Clark and to the support of the children while her care has been £8,500 per month. Sir Arnold Clark died aged 89 in April 2017. He was the son of a steelworker and born in Townhead, Glasgow. He left school at 14 and sold vegetables door to door that his father grew in an allotment and worked for the co-op before being conscripted into the RAF. He then built his car sales business and was thought to have been a billionaire at the time he passed away. His group operates 200 dealerships across the UK, selling up to a quarter of a million cars annually. On December 24, 2004, Mr. Clark's engagement to Gillian was announced in the Times newspaper. The announcement stated, "The engagement is announced between John Arnold, eldest son of Sir Arnold and Lady Clark, of Crowhill House, Killearn, Glasgow, and Jolaine Catherine, daughter of Mr. and Mrs. John Stewart, of Cultra, County Down." The judgment tells of how the couple met in 1999 or 2000. She was self-employed and worked part-time from a small office in Glasgow where she had a sewing machine and facilities for screen printing. Mrs. Clark, a fine arts and textiles graduate from Glasgow School of Art, made cushions and bedspreads. Her work was featured in Vogue, and her products were stocked by the prestigious Dublin store Brown Thomas. However, the work was not profitable, and she moved on to take a job in it as a salesperson with an office furnishing company. Lady Carmichael ordered Mr. Clark to pay his estranged spouse a capital sum of £1,163,561. Lady Carmichael added, "I will also make an order for a periodical allowance of £5,500 per month for a period of 6 months following decree or until payment of the capital sum, if that is more than 6 months. I will thereafter award £4,000 per month for a further period of 6 months or the remainder of the first calendar year following divorce after payment of the capital sum, if that period is less than 6 months, £3,000 per month in the following year, and £2,500 per month in the year after that." And that report was by James Mulholland. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 8th of March, from the news section, "Brewery celebrates 18th birthday in style," report by Nicole Mitchell. A German-style brewery and beer hall in the city's East End is set to celebrate its 18th birthday. On Sunday, West Brewery, which brews, kegs, cans and bottles its beers on-site next to Glasgow Green, will officially be legally old enough to drink, and hundreds of fans are invited to join the celebrations. West on the Green, which is located in the former Templeton's Carpet Factory building, first opened its doors on March 10, 2006, and the team will be marking the landmark birthday by giving away 180 free pints. The award-winning independent brewer was founded by Bavarian Petra Wetzel after her dad visited her in her adopted hometown and couldn't find a beer like the ones he enjoyed in Germany. Staying true to its slogan, "Glaswegian heart, German head," West is the only UK brewery which produces all its lagers and ales in strict accordance with the Reinheitsgebot purity law of 1516 and now ships to all corners of the globe. West is now home to at least 14 brands at any one time, from staples like St. Mungo and West 4 to Heidi Weisse and Munich Red. Matt Munro, Managing Director, took over the running of the business in 2021. He said, "There was nothing like it in Glasgow when West launched, and there still isn't. The industry has changed. The craft beer boom has been and gone in the years since we launched, but we've just stayed relentlessly focusing on doing what we do best, brewing the very best beer. I think that's why we've endured through recessions, Brexit, COVID, and all the upheaval of the last 18 years. People need a constant, and brands that they trust regardless of what's going on in the world." While Petra's no longer around during the day, her vision is what made this place what it is, and we're very much staying true to that. "Our job is to protect the ethos of the brand and grow the business in the years to come." Petra added, "West was designed to be a third place, somewhere different to work and home that is sorely lacking in society today. This is more the case now than ever before. We set out with a vision to create something truly open to everyone, young and old. Being independent, we've always been able to focus on what's best for the customer. Our growth has been organic. It's all become because of our chase for perfection. I love nothing more than returning to West for a perfect pint and people watching. It is a very special place in my heart and remains a huge part of my life." West is planning a year of celebration and is set to launch a limited edition range to mark its anniversary. There will also be a summer festival on the Green, a new live entertainment schedule with a host of different events throughout the year, and an exciting new food and drink menu. And that report was by Nicole Mitchell. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 8th of March, from the news section. Expensive makeover or street delayed? This article is unattributed. A multi-million pound makeover project for a busy street in Glasgow has been delayed by several months. Glasgow City Council has revealed the £5.7 million revamp of the city's Circuit Hall Street, which was set to be completed last summer, will now be finished by November or December. The local authority said the reason for the delay is due to the discovery of issues with underground utilities leading to elements of the design being amended. The council said the design amendment work has now been completed and construction work has resumed, which will result in an increased level of activity in the area over the next few weeks. The project started on September 27th last year. Titled the Circuit Hall Precinct and Cambridge Street Avenue Project, the precinct will be connected to Circuit Hall Avenue at Rose Street and stretch to West Nile Street. The connecting Cambridge Street Avenue will reach Kirkcaldy Road. The avenue is part of a wider network of new, attractive, accessible, safe, sustainable and easily maintained routes through the city centre being developed by the Glasgow City Region Deal funded programme. As part of the work, roads, pavements and footways on the streets will be reconstructed with new curbing, traffic signals, 40 new street trees, rain gardens and street lighting, all features of the work. A spokesperson for Glasgow City Council said, "The work currently taking place at Cambridge Street and Circuit Hall Street will, when complete, significantly improve the roads, pavements and footways there, with cycle paths, new lighting and new street trees, more than were in place before, amongst the features to be introduced. We are very aware of the disruption this work can bring, and its impact on the appearance of the area, but when all the work is complete, the environment on Cambridge Street and this part of Circuit Hall Street will be far more attractive for everyone who visits the area." Forthcoming projects for proposals on Circuit Hall Street and the streets close to it will help to regenerate one of our greatest and most famous thoroughfares. And that report was unattributed. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 8th of March, from the news section, Group breaks down barriers to get teens' careers started. Report by Nicole Mitchell. A charity is helping young people from challenging backgrounds get into supported work placements. Working Right assists school leavers in getting their foot in the door of their chosen career, regardless of their academic background or previous experience. Trainees learn in a proper workplace, receive one-to-one meetings, earn a weekly allowance and are given the chance to prove themselves in the real world of work. Ross Cunningham started an apprenticeship with Rewire Solutions last October, after leaving school at the end of his fourth year. The 16-year-old says he got involved with Working Right as he wasn't interested in staying in school. He said, "I always knew I wanted to be a Sparky, but if everywhere I was looking was asking for too many hires because I couldn't do hires because I wasn't in the right school year. My careers advisor told me about Working Right and I was found a placement." Ross, from Yoker, says the experience has been brilliant and has been massively helpful in kickstarting his career. He said, "It's been really good. You meet new people and I've got a few new friends out of it as well. They're all doing really well too. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now without it. I'd just be in school or stuck in something I don't like." Ross will also start college in August and will study for 4 years to be a qualified electrician. Working Right recently formed a new partnership with White Inch and Scotland Housing Association, WSHA. Whilst the charity has run activities out of the White Inch Centre for many years, the Housing Association is now taking it over, which will evolve it further into a real community hub. Working Right will work with WSHA as its employability partners, offering placements for young people from the White Inch and Scotstoun areas. James Ward, CEO of WSHA, said, "The collaboration with Working Right allows us to use their expertise and knowledge to help support the aspirations of the next generation of our tenants. WSHE are committed to helping our tenants and the wider community strive for a better standard of living and to assist them in being able to improve their life chances and opportunities. Sandy Campbell, Working Right founder, added, "Partnering with a housing association such as WSHA is an ideal relationship for our work-based mentoring model of training young people. WSHA gives us a local presence that the young people and their families relate to. Over the past decade, we have helped over 200 local young people in this area secure the job or apprenticeship that was right for them across all industries and types of employment." And that was a report by Nicole Mitchell. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 8th of March, opinion, letter to the editor, no sense of privacy now. The curse of the technological era comes with as many pitfalls as it brings benefits, not least that of the mobile phone and its Bluetooth earbuds and headphones, allowing mobile calls to be made literally any time or place. It seems some folk are no longer aware of the invasion of personal space to those around them when talking on their phones, or the total lack of privacy they're giving themselves discussing personal issues or having arguments in full glare of the public. It'd be nice to see people with more civility when making private, personal calls in public, by considering those around them as much for their own benefit as for others. Jill Ferguson. The well-trailed two-pence cut in National Insurance Contributions, NICs, has dominated the budget headlines, amounting to a net tax cut of £9 billion. However, this is dwarfed by Tory stealth tax rises of an estimated £27 billion that came into effect last year, and a further £19 billion coming in after the election. The tax burden is now at a 70-year high, and people have taken an unprecedented hit to their living standards in recent years. Those earning £19,000 or less will now be worse off because, as more of their pay is dragged above the frozen tax-free allowance of £12,570, they'll lose more than they gain from the NIC cuts. The biggest gainers are those earning £50,000, meaning that this is a budget that will hit the poorest hardest. Looking over the longer term, the average wage after taking into account of inflation will take until 2026 to get back to its 2008 level, nearly two decades of lost pay growth. Beware the budget's smoke and mirrors. The Chancellor is giving with one hand and taking more with the other. Letter by Alex Orr. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 8th of March, from the news section. Man with balaclava asked schoolgirls to take his hand. Report by Lauren Brownlee. A stranger wearing a balaclava approached two young girls outside school gates and asked them to take his hand. The St Bernard's primary pupils were outside the entrance on Seamill Street in Knits Hill when the alarming incident took place. At around 8:55am on Wednesday, the pair, who were on their way to school, were stopped by the man who was dressed in all black. He said to have asked them to take his hand, and when they said no, he told them he'd be back at 3pm. The shocking incident was reported to a teacher, and the police were called, who will be increasing their presence in the area. Officers will also be attending the school to speak to pupils about stranger danger. Cops have launched an investigation and are carrying out CCTV checks and door-to-door inquiries. The parents of the girls involved took to social media to warn others about what happened. A Facebook post has been shared more than 200 times. Speaking to the Glasgow Times, one parent said, "If he's standing outside school gates at 8:45am with a balaclava on, I assume that's a planned event. And, because he failed that morning, he could go to another school." I asked the police if this would have been an attempted kidnapping, and they hummed and hawed a bit. The other question I asked was, if they would be putting this information out, because there are other schools in the area, and they said it's an ongoing investigation, but it might not go that far. Parents of children at the school were issued a letter yesterday by head teacher Elaine McKeegan. It read, "Police Scotland have been contacted by the school alerting them to an incident that happened yesterday morning. two of our pupils were approached on Pinmore Street by an unknown male wearing dark clothing slash hat. The police are taking the incident seriously and, as a result, will be in attendance at our school gates and there will be an increased presence within the local area. It is important that we all continue to be vigilant in the school community, but remain calm whilst we let the police do their job. Inquiries are ongoing to establish the full circumstances. We have also alerted all local schools. Our community police officers will be coming into school on Tuesday afternoon to speak to our children about stranger danger. Please do not hesitate to get in touch if you have any further concerns. A Glasgow City Council spokesperson said, "We know that this incident will be alarming for families and I can reassure them that the safety of their children is our primary focus here. The school will keep everyone updated with any information as we let the police do their job." A Police Scotland spokesperson added, "We received a report of a man approaching two children on Seamill Street in Glasgow around 8:55 a.m. on March the 6th. Inquiries are ongoing to establish the full circumstances." That report was by Lauren Brownlee. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 8th of March, from the news section. OAP who thought gun was daft old thing jailed. Report by James Mulholland. A pensioner who thought a deadly gun he discovered under floorboards was a daft old thing has been given 5 years for illegal firearm possession. George Watt, 65, was arrested by police who found a revolver which was kept in a bag in a wardrobe at his former home in Govan, Glasgow on March 18, 2022. The High Court heard how the discovery emerged when a cleaner for a housing association came across it whilst cleaning out the property for a new tenant. Judge Lord Doherty heard how Watt, of Cardonald, later told police that he didn't think anything about it after finding the firearm. Watt, who pleaded guilty to possessing the gun without proper authority earlier this year, appeared for sentencing yesterday at the High Court in Edinburgh. Defence advocate Victoria Dow asked Lord Doherty not to impose a 5-year term on her client for the offence, the sentence required under tough firearms legislation. Describing Watt's attitude towards the gun, she said, "Upon finding it, he pulled the trigger and it did not work, and it compounded his belief that it was a daft old thing." At a hearing earlier this year, the court heard that Glasgow Housing Association employee Alan Stewart was tasked with cleaning Watt's home after he moved out to make way for a new tenant. Prosecutor Vish Kathiruria said, "Mr. Stewart emptied the wardrobe and found a black bag under clothing which he noticed was heavy. He opened it to see what was inside and he found a black revolver which he put on the floor and called his manager. Mr. Stewart was informed to leave the property and contacted the police. Police and firearms officers attended the property to make the gun safe before it was seized. The gun was described to be an Italian-manufactured converted blank-firing revolver. It was 18 cm in length with a barrel length of just under 10 cm. The revolver was stated to be in poor condition but can fire modified blank cartridges." Mr. Kathiruria added that a test of the gun with BB bullets resulted in the opinion that if fired at a person, it could be fatal. What was traced meantime, where he told officers that he found it under the floorboards in May when putting an aerial from the bedroom into the living room. Mr. Kathiruria said, "He told officers he did not think anything of it. He said no one else knew about it and that he was told not to hold it for anyone. He had no knowledge of it being adapted." Yesterday, Ms. Dow said there were exceptional circumstances that would allow the court to impose a lesser sentence on her client. She said he was in poor health and had cooperated with police when the weapon was discovered. She added, "It is my submission that when these circumstances are considered, the court can depart from its course of imposing a 5-year sentence. There are exceptional circumstances in this case." Passing sentence, Lord Doherty told Watt, who observed proceedings via video link from HMP Barlinnie, that he wasn't persuaded to impose anything other than a 5-year term. He added, "If this was fired at another person, the firearm could have been lethal. I am not satisfied that this is one of the rare cases where it can be said that there are exceptional circumstances. This was a firearm that you ought to have informed the police about. In all the circumstances, the appropriate sentence is one of 5 years imprisonment. And that was a report by James Mulholland. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 8th of March, in the news section, thug fractured man's skull with bicycle saddle. Report by Connor Gordon. A thug fractured a man's skull with a bicycle saddle during a melee. Cameron in Black, 20, pounced on Thomas McManus in Glasgow City Centre on May the 4th last year. Black was earlier a victim of a vicious attack by McManus and another man. However, Black pursued McManus and struck him with the weapon while the victim had been dragged to the ground. First offender Black pleaded guilty yesterday at Glasgow Sheriff Court to assaulting McManus to a severe injury and permanent disfigurement. The court heard McManus initially met Black outside St Enoch Shopping Centre and the pair shook hands before they spoke. McManus later attempted to punch Black before he was then struck by an unknown man. The unknown man then jumped on Black, who was on the ground. McManus tried to kick Black to his head, meantime, and the incident lasted 1 minute. The pair left the scene but were followed by Black. McManus, who noticed that he was followed, brandished a glass bottle at Black. Black then grabbed a saddle from a nearby bike and ran towards McManus. Prosecutor Sean Docherty said, Black attempted to strike him with the saddle as McManus tried to strike him with a bottle. McManus attempted to run away from Black. However, he was dragged to the ground by an unknown man. Black approached him on the ground and struck him with the saddle to his head with force a number of times. McManus was able to get up and fled to a nearby McDonald's for safety. He was later taken to hospital where he was treated for a head wound with 9 stitches. Mr. Docherty added, a CT scan also revealed a small skull fracture. Sentence was deferred pending background reports until next month by Sheriff Daniel Kelly. Black, of the city's Bridgeton, had his bail continued meantime. And that was a report by Connor Gordon.
From Glasgow Times, Friday, 8th of March, Lifestyle section. The story of Glasgow's Hard Rock Cafe as venue closes. An exclusive by Anne Fotheringham. It is one of the world's most famous brands, and in 2013, Hard Rock Cafe opened its doors on Glasgow's most stylish street in a blaze of publicity. The 170-seat restaurant and music venue, which mysteriously closed without warning earlier this week, was a feather in the cap for Buchanan Street, right in the heart of the Style Mile, when Glasgow was the biggest shopping destination in the UK outside of London. It is a sad end to the much-anticipated venue, which opened amid plenty of fanfare in November 2013. Hard Rock Cafe brought with it glamour and celebrity. Famous fans included Nicole Scherzinger and Yoko Ono, and it quickly became a tourist hotspot. Before opening day, our photographers were given access behind the scenes as staff started to move in some of the most sought-after musical memorabilia in history, including John Lennon's corduroy jacket, a bass guitar that belonged to Pink Floyd's Roger Waters, dresses belonging to Katy Perry and Lady Gaga, Madonna's iconic corset and a leather jacket worn by Sid Vicious. Memorabilia designer Giovanni Taliaferro posed with pictures of homegrown star Alex Harvey, while operations manager Amy Harris showed off one of the fantastic instruments on display, an exclusive silver-plated guitar, and bar staff Monica Carlin, Elsa Brescia, and Lindsay McDonald gave a taste of the cocktails which would be served up once doors opened. Isaac Tigret and Peter Morton opened the first Hard Rock Cafe in London in 1971. Today, Hard Rock International has venues in more than 74 countries. The famous logo was designed by celebrity artist Alan Aldridge,
who is best known for his work with the Beatles. Paul McCartney and Wings performed an impromptu concert at Hard Rock Cafe, a warm-up gig for their 1973 tour, and Carole King wrote the hit Hard Rock Cafe in tribute to the venue. According to the Hard Rock website, Eric Clapton was a regular in London and asked Isaac to hang his guitar over his bar stool to mark his spot. A week later, a package arrived with a guitar and a note that stated, "Mine's as good as his. Love, Pete." It was from the Who guitarist Pete Townsend. Now Hard Rock's memorabilia collection includes around 87,000 pieces. In 1982, the first US Cathy opened in Los Angeles. The Glasgow venue was the company's second in Scotland after Edinburgh. It was created inside the Athenaeum Theatre, which opened in 1893. Previously home to the Scottish National Academy of Music in 1929, which later became the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama, the striking building was also the first home of the Citizens Theatre, now based in the Gorbals, and Scottish Youth Theatre, who used the premises from 1989 until 1998. A string of big names and local acts have played there over the last 11 years, including KT Tunstall, who donated her Epiphone Firebird to the Glasgow venue. Other memorabilia on display included A Frightened Rabbit 2013 Tea in the Park signed setlist, and a kilt worn by Clarence Clemens of Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band. A few months after opening, Hard Rock Cafe Glasgow hosted Clyde One's Big Weekend, with DJ Noxie at the helm and star guests including the Fratellis and Amy MacDonald. Fratellis drummer Mince and Hard Rock CEO Hamish Dodds smashed guitars outside as part of the high-profile opening party. In February 2019, Bay City Rollers fans from around the world joined together at the Hard Rock Cafe in Glasgow to celebrate Scottish legend Stuart Woody Woo, who performed with the new generation Bay City Rollers in front of a packed crowd. That article was an exclusive by Anne Fotheringham. From Glasgow Times, Friday, 8th of March, Lifestyle section, Huge Scottish Band Set to Host Intimate Concert in Glasgow, by Ben Waddle. A huge Scottish band are set to host an intimate concert in Glasgow. The Jesus and Mary Chain will perform at the city's St Luke's on Tuesday, March 19th, as part of their UK tour warm-up. The show comes as the group mark their 40th anniversary this year with a new album, The Glasgow Eyes. Set to be released today, Friday, March the 8th, it is their first studio album since Damage and Joy in 2017. The band is known for their hits including Just Like Honey, Sometimes Always, April Skies, Head On and many more. Tickets for the show will go on sale from Friday, March the 8th at 10 a.m. That article was written by Ben Waddle. From Glasgow Times, Friday, 8th of March, Lifestyle section, venue located in Glasgow Railway Arches to offer cheap street food, by Sandhya Suresh. A popular Glasgow venue will be celebrating its 6th year with cheap cocktails and a £5 street food menu throughout March. Platform on Argyle Street will kickstart their celebrations with a signature birthday cake cocktail, a new Fiver Fridays, and complimentary Prosecco on Mother's Day. Fiver Fridays is where any dish from their street food inspired menu is available for £5, running every Friday throughout March, from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. Mother's Day celebrations include a complimentary bottle of Prosecco for mums who book a table in advance for Sunday, March the 10th. Platform extends its definition of mum to dog mums, new mums, or the friend group's resident mother figure. Scott McCormick, regional managing director at Platform, said, "We've hosted standout events over the years, introduced a new split-level bar, and built a strong community in Glasgow and beyond. Platform is a place many know and love, and we continue to grow. Join us for this month's celebrations, from Fiver Friday to special treats for our birthday and Mother's Day. A big thank you to our team, customers and friends for your support over these 6 years." Underneath Glasgow's iconic Victorian railway arches, the venue will also be celebrating with live music, DJ sets, late night cocktails and tasty street food. Platform is also offering a birthday cake cocktail complete with panther milk, fraise de bois and milk during March for £6. There will also be live acoustic music from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. every Thursday, Friday and Saturday. That article was written by Sandhya Suresh.
Glasgow Times News, on Monday the 11th of March. Activists hand out stolen baby formula for Mother's Day. An article written by Kirsty Fierick. Activists handed out stolen baby formula for Mother's Day in Glasgow. Members of This Is Rigged also gave away biscuits, teas and coffees that had been allegedly stolen from supermarkets on Buchanan Street. The group was protesting the cost of living crisis as skyrocketing prices and soaring household bills continue to affect millions across the nation. Four members, including a nurse and a former teacher, were spotted proudly boasting that their table full of items had been stolen to help parents struggling to feed their children. This forms part of a wave of stunts that This Is Rigged is describing as redistributive action. The campaign is demanding that supermarkets slash prices of baby formula to March 2021 prices. Rona, who is 25, an intensive care nurse in Glasgow, said, "I'm taking action today because I strongly believe that food is a human right, and as the climate crisis worsens, so will food insecurity." Over 1.2 million people in Scotland are facing food insecurity. "As a nurse, I see the effects of our government's austerity measures on a daily basis. For supermarkets to be pushing their prices up while people are struggling to afford to eat is a disgrace." Kate, who's 69 and a retired teacher, added, "I think it's important to show how appalled I am about what the government is not doing to combat this crisis. We want to spread awareness of this issue and highlight how the food redistribution that we are doing should not be necessary. And based on conversations today, the people of Glasgow agree." Posting on social media, This Is Rigged said, "We stole this baby formula. A happy Mother's Day from This Is Rigged." Four people with This Is Rigged are handing out free baby formula, biscuits, tea and coffees on Buchanan Street. On a holiday meant to celebrate motherhood, an enormous part of the population is watching the products essential for their children's survival become totally inaccessible. Baby formula has increased on average by 24% since March 2021, and supermarkets have begun security tagging formula to crack down on parents forced to steal to feed their children. This is an act of violence. With Victorian-era diseases of malnutrition like scurvy and rickets on the rise, we will not stand for this corporate profiteering and government inaction any longer. An article written by Kirsty Fierick. Glasgow Times News, on Monday the 11th of March. Doctor's mould warning for Glasgow homes. An exclusive article written by Kirsty Fierick. A doctor has warned that the cost of living crisis is sending more people to hospital. Kirsty Jones has seen more people being admitted for failing health after being unable to pay their heating bills. The 27-year-old, who lives in Shawlands, said cold homes are contributing to mouldy environments, which are directly risking people's health. According to the NHS, if you have damp and mould in your home, you're more likely to have respiratory problems, respiratory infections, allergies or asthma. Damp and mould can also affect the immune system. Dr. Jones told the Glasgow Times, "I'm particularly interested in the issue of fuel poverty. Something that I believe is not considered enough is that when people can't afford to heat their homes properly, this leads to damp conditions and mould. This has a huge impact on health, which we're seeing in hospitals. People are coming in with chronic conditions like asthma or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, which are worsening. Breathing in these mouldy environments also makes these lung problems more likely to happen. Dr. Jones spoke to the Glasgow Times at a recent cost of living protest in Easterhouse on Friday. We also spoke to other activists who admitted they've been forced to change the way they heat their homes because of soaring bills. Julia Mountain said she only puts the heating on in her house if she has a guest because of skyrocketing costs. The 67-year-old, who lives near Charing Cross, explained that even though she can afford to pay her bills, she is forced to pick and choose when she can have a warm house. She said, "I can pay for my electric and gas, but I feel a lot of sympathy and solidarity with people who are struggling. I spoke to a woman who can only put her heating on the one day a week she looks after her grandchildren. I just thought how terrible to be in that position, but then realised I have also really changed my behaviour a lot. I often don't have the heating on or keep it on very low. I only put it up when I have people to stay or to visit. We all need to group together and say that this is wrong." An exclusive article written by Kirsty Feerick. Glasgow Times News on Monday, the 11th of March. Former Labour MP Tommy McAvoy dies aged 80. An article written by Adam Robertson. Tributes have been paid to former Labour MP Tommy McAvoy, who has died at the age of 80. The former Labour Party whip represented Rutherglen and Hamilton West from 2005 until he became a member of the House of Lords in 2010. He previously served as the MP for the former Glasgow-Rutherglen constituency from 1987 to 2005. Scottish Labour leader Anna Sawa has paid tribute to Mr. McAvoy, saying he was heartbroken at the death of a man he regarded as a mentor. He said, "Throughout my time in politics, he was always there when you needed him, to give you some of his hard-earned advice or to put an arm around you. As a champion for Rutherglen and an ever-present voice in the last Labour government, his dedication to the public service changed the lives of so many people. He could be fierce in standing up for what he thought was right, but to me he will always be Uncle Tommy." Former Deputy First Minister John Swinney was also among those to pay tribute, writing on X, formerly known as Twitter, "I'm very sorry to read this news. Tommy McAvoy was a man totally devoted to the Labour cause and determined as a leading whip to ensure its success. But he still found space to look out for others in the House of Commons, and that included me. My condolences to his family." Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer also said his thoughts were with Mr. McAvoy's family and said on social media, "His long and esteemed public service for his hometown of Rutherglen and his loyal contribution to the Labour government are just two ways to remember a respected, warm and honourable man." Michael Shanks, who was elected as Rutherglen and Hamilton West MP last year, said, "Incredibly sad news that Rutherglen's MP for 18 years, Tommy McAvoy, has passed away. A legend of the Labour family as a shop steward at the Hoover factory, then serving 13 years in government as a whip. Throughout, he was a champion for Rutherglen with a great sense of humour." An article written by Adam Robertson. Glasgow Times News on Monday, the 11th of March. Hundreds of sex offenders allowed to change their names. An article written by Lauren Brownlee. Hundreds of registered sex offenders have been legally allowed to change their names, fuelling public safety concerns. Among those to exploit the dangerous loophole was killer Jason Graham, who raped and murdered Glasgow pensioner Esther Brown in May 2021. Mr. Graham had been previously convicted of raping a nurse and leaving her for dead back in 2013. But he was using the name Jason Evans when he murdered Ms. Brown, who was 67, in her own home in Woodlands. The much-loved churchgoer was involved with countless projects in her retirement, including Glasgow Street Pastors, food banks, and her beloved St. Silas Church. Police Scotland records reveal the force was notified of 392 instances of sex criminals changing their names within a 19-month period, from April 1, 2022 to October 31 last year. Currently, sex offenders must notify the police of any name change, but they are not prohibited from changing their names. Russell Findlay, Scottish Conservative Shadow Justice Secretary, is calling for the practice to be banned because it allows dangerous criminals to hide in plain sight by masking their true identity. The MSP said, "Hundreds more registered sex offenders in Scotland have been legally able to change their names. People who they meet in daily life, especially those they have relationships with, are deprived of knowing who they really are. Being placed on the sex offenders register is not done lightly, and it's clearly wrong for them to be able to hide in plain sight in this way." Having first called on SNP ministers to close this dangerous loophole 2 years ago, nothing has happened. The government says that public protection measures are sufficient, but that claim is simply untrue. These alarming new figures demonstrate the growing scale of this problem. Does there need to be another tragic crime before action is taken? An article written by Lauren Brownlee. Glasgow Times News on Monday, the 11th of March. Eye-opening prison course hailed by inmates. An exclusive article written by Esther Tarnay. A rehabilitation programme celebrated a milestone in transforming the lives of Low Moss inmates. The Glasgow Times was given exclusive access to the Sycamore Tree Project's last session of its 50th course, focusing on victim awareness. Over 12 years, more than 400 men inside the Bishopriggs prison have taken part in the programme. Inmates said the meetings, spanning over 6 weeks for each group, opened their eyes to how many people were impacted by their actions. One participant said, "We thought about justice and what it really means. Where do we go from here? And taking responsibility for our crimes. I learned a lot about the ripple effect and to think about things before you do them. It was a big help. The realisation is a bit scary. It's very beneficial. Going forward, I will not be so short-sighted." Another man added, "It's an eye-opener to reflect and see what I've done and realise who the victims were. There is so much more than the victim alone, including the family, friends, or anyone who witnessed the crime. These people are all involved. I find that really touching." A third prisoner said, "I grew up in a background where I struggled to talk about my feelings, but the ladies here persevered and showed me a totally different perspective on crime. It really opened my eyes to what life is about. What we learned here will stick with me for the rest of my life. Prison is a hard place to be, but I really enjoyed coming here and talking about things." At the end, participants are encouraged to write a symbolic letter to someone affected by their crime. The scheme is run by Prison Fellowship Scotland and is supported by wonderful volunteers who all received a special painting created by Low Moss inmates to mark the occasion. Margaret has been part of the team since the programme was launched. She said, "We use the story of the sycamore tree from the Bible and look how actions affect people. You really do see a change. They come in at the start. Some are not even aware of how relevant it is to their experience. By the end, the majority of them do respond in different ways. Something we teach them is about the ripple effect and how the effect of their crime reach more than just the victim. Their family, friends and the local community are all affected. A lot of them never think about that." An exclusive article written by Esther Tarnay. Glasgow Times News on Monday, the 11th of March. Justin Curry says the idea of not performing is quite grim. An article written by Craig Williams. Del Amitri's lead singer Justin Curry has said it's quite grim that he will have to stop performing one day due to Parkinson's disease. The Glasgow-born musician revealed his diagnosis in an interview with BBC Radio 4's Tremolo programme. Speaking on BBC One's Sunday with Laura Koonsberg ahead of the broadcast, Mr. Curry said, "I can't play the way I would expect to, and I know it will get worse. At what rate, nobody knows. I know I'm going to have to stop. Whereas formerly, people like me would never want to stop. We want to be singing in a pub at the age of 80 or something and be dragged off by our grandchildren in embarrassment. The idea of having to stop, that's quite grim. The 59-year-old reflected on how the disease has affected him and said, "I seem to have lost a bit of diaphragm control." He added, "It's already changed my personality in not necessarily negative ways. With any form of disability, you become aware of disability in general, and you become acutely aware of that line that disabled people have been saying for years, that there aren't able-bodied people, there are just a lot of people who are not yet disabled. I quite like that. I quite like the idea that we're all going to go through some of these difficulties at some point in life." He added, "I think you do think you're invulnerable until something proves that you're not. That ridiculous cliché, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, is not true. If you lose a leg, you're not strong, and I'm not stronger for having Parkinson's, believe you me." Delamitri formed in Glasgow in 1980 and is best known for the song Nothing Ever Happens, which peaked at number 11 in the UK singles chart. The group has also had 6 albums in the top 10 in the UK albums chart. An article written by Craig Williams. Glasgow Times, on Monday, the 11th of March. Lifestyle. Alison Hammond never wanted ITV's This Morning hosting job. An article written by Joshua Searle. Alison Hammond never wanted to host This Morning full-time, she has revealed. The popular presenter currently co-hosts the ITV daytime show on Fridays with Dermot O'Leary, but insisted she did not want to take on the full-time presenting job. The hosting job has been handed to Kat Deely and Ben Shepherd, who Alison says she doesn't resent as she is too busy with her other commitments throughout the rest of the week. Speaking to the Sunday Times magazine, Alison said, "We're the Friday guys. We love being the Friday guys." Asked if there was any discussion about her presenting more often, she said, "Absolutely not. How could I? I live in Birmingham and do Bake Off and For the Love of Dogs. I never wanted that job. Last year we did do extra because we were going through issues, but Kat and Ben will save that show." The show was mired in scandal last year following the departure of Philip Schofield, and while Alison didn't want to talk about the controversy, she insisted she wishes the best for the presenter. She said, "Listen, I don't want to get into salacious gossip. All I need to say is I personally wish Philip Schofield all the best. I loved Philip Schofield, full stop. But that's the last thing I would want to speak about." The Great British Bake Off host is always happy to meet fans when she's out and about because she views it as her job. She said, "I bring joy, but I take it seriously because life is hard and you've just seen how people react to me. I make them forget their life. I bring joy, that's my role, and if that can happen for somebody through my laugh, which even I find annoying, that's fine by me." An article written by Joshua Searle. Glasgow Times, on Monday, the 11th of March. Lifestyle. Janie Godley on the red carpet at a world premiere in Glasgow. An article written by Kirsty Feerick. Janie Godley appeared on the red carpet attending the world premiere of a movie about herself. The Glasgow comedian was joined by her daughter, Ashley Story, for the last day of the Glasgow Film Festival. The duo were dressed to impress outside the Glasgow Film Theatre ahead of watching Janie, John Archer's documentary about the stand-up comic's final tour following her terminal cancer diagnosis. The film closed the Glasgow Film Festival's 20th edition, celebrating cinema in the city. Icelandic football film The Home Game also scooped a prestigious audience award. Smari Gunn and Logi Sigursveinsson's documentary about plucky underdogs Reynir FC's bid for Cup Glory scored the highest audience score in the award's 10-year history. Other films shortlisted for the award, sponsored by Mubi, included Viggo Mortensen's The Dead Don't Hurt and Aidan Tazel's Isle of Skye shot romance Falling Into Place. Glasgow Film Festival's Audience Award is sponsored by Mubi and chosen by the most important people at the festival, its audience. The home game's directors, Smari Gunn and Logi Sigurdsfinnsson, said, "We are incredibly proud to receive this honour at the Glasgow Film Festival. Being a small film from Iceland, it means so much for us to get this recognition and the opportunity to share the story of these lovable Icelandic villagers as far and wide as possible. Everyone at the Glasgow Film Festival has been so welcoming to us, and the audience reactions really blew us away. Huge thanks to all the people that came out, watched the film, and showed such warmth and support. Thank you, Glasgow." Alison Gardner, director of the Glasgow Film Festival and CEO of Glasgow Film, said, "We are delighted that the home game has won the audience award. Our audiences are the best in the world, and we can't thank them enough. We've had a brilliant time welcoming guests to the festival, and I want to warmly thank MUBI for their support of our audience award." The company said, "Bringing audiences closer to a wide range of new and exciting cinema is what MUBI is all about, and we're honoured to partner with the Glasgow Film Festival for the first time this year to support the only prize the festival gives out, the Audience Award." An article written by Kirsty Fierick. Glasgow Times News on Monday, the 11th of March. Social worker in jail after sex attacks. An article written by Grant McCabe. A social worker is behind bars for a string of depraved sex attacks on three women. Thomas Proctor preyed on his victims, including using his position to threaten to have the children of two of them removed from their care. The 43-year-old raped one while she was recovering in hospital. He also took advantage of a victim after she drank water with a mystery substance in it. Mr. Proctor had denied the accusations during a trial at the High Court in Glasgow, but jurors found him guilty of a total of 11 charges. They included the repeated rape and indecent assault of the first woman at different locations in Lanarkshire. Mr. Proctor was convicted of sexually assaulting the second woman at a flat in Glasgow's Maryhill. He was finally guilty of raping and making threats to the final woman in Fife and in Lanarkshire. The crimes spanned between January 2002 and August 2019. Judge William Gallagher remanded Mr. Proctor of Airdrie in custody as sentencing was adjourned for reports. In his closing speech to jurors, prosecutor Alan Parfrey told how Mr. Proctor was calculated in a predatory fashion towards his victims. During one early attack with the first woman, he stated to her, "I'm teaching you what you will like and what you do not like." Her horrific ordeal at Mr. Proctor's hands included being raped while she was recuperating in hospital from a medical procedure. She recalled that if he was pestering her for sex, he told her it was to be expected. Mr. Proctor attacked the woman again at a house in Lanarkshire after he came into the room and pulled down her pyjamas. After the harrowing incident, the woman told the court, "He was very calm and nonchalant. She was also choked during other sex attacks." The woman said she tried to stay calm during this. She added, "There would be more pressure if I struggled." The court heard how the social worker further belittled her by claiming she did not have a university degree or an income. She described being left to feel worthless. The second victim recalled waking up to finding Mr. Proctor molesting her. Her reaction was to demand that he stop. But Mr. Proctor told her, "You were liking it." The final woman got to know Mr. Proctor having met him online. She ended up in his company one night after she returned from a night out with friends at the Edinburgh Festival. Mr. Proctor gave her a glass of water. She said they kissed, but her next memory was waking up in some pain. Prosecutors said he had caused the woman to ingest an unknown substance in water to overpower her for sexual activity. The woman asked what happened, but he casually put to her, "Do you not remember?" Jurors heard a similar sort of incident happened on two other occasions. He gave her water, told her to drink up, before she later awoke and had flashbacks to what had happened. The court heard that Mr. Proctor also flew into a rage with the woman, believing she was interested in a much older delivery driver who had come to her home. In his closing speech, Mr. Parfrey also spoke of Mr. Proctor's position as a social worker to make sure threats on two of the women packed a punch. Referring to one of the victims, the prosecutor put to him, "You told her that you held such a job and how the system worked, that she should be intimate with you if she wanted to keep her child. The cruelest of cruel threats." Mr. Proctor denied the accusation, adding that he never mentioned his work to threaten anyone. Mr. Parfrey later told jurors that there was only one person who knew what to say for a clear and devastating outcome. Mr. Proctor had latterly been a social worker in the Alloa area in Clackmannanshire before being suspended. A spokesperson for Clackmannanshire Council confirmed after the case that he was no longer employed by the authority. An article written by Grant McCabe.
From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 12th of March, from a news section. Appeal to anti-abortion protesters. This article is unattributed. The MSP behind plans to create buffer zones outside abortion clinics has urged protesters to consider the impact they have on women seeking to access the services. The Abortion Services Safe Access Zones Scotland Bill has been under consideration at Holyrood's Health, Social Care and Sport Committee in recent weeks, taking evidence from those generally in favour of the legislation. Today, those against the bill, including religious groups, will appear before the committee. Speaking ahead of the session, Green MSP Gillian Mackay said women seeking an abortion or other healthcare at such clinics feel judged, intimidated and harassed by vigils taking place outside. They have seen the same testimonies and evidence that I have. Nobody should go through that to access healthcare, she said. I urge all of the protesters to consider their own roles and awful impact on the words of their words and banners. They can protest outside our parliament by all means, but to knowingly target people who are often in a vulnerable place is utterly wrong, and I am determined that my bill will put a stop to it. But, in a submission to the bill's consultation, the Bishops' Conference of Scotland, whose Vice President Bishop John Keenan will appear today before the committee, said the proposals were extreme and patronising to women. The submission also raised questions about the impact of the bill on human rights. The right of freedom to expression and freedom of assembly and association will be seriously impacted by the proposals, as the bill will criminalise people for expressing certain views and occupying certain spaces, it said. The bill also takes the extraordinary step of criminalising prayer, contrary to the right of freedom of thought, conscience and religion, and will disproportionately affect people of faith. And the article was unattributed. From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 12th of March, from the news section. Campaigners plea over housing crisis. Report by Sandhya Suresh. A social housing campaigner is urging Scottish politicians and sector leaders to address the housing crisis urgently. Speaking ahead of the Share annual conference in Glasgow, Kwadwo Twenyboa is advocating for an end to the stigma surrounding social housing, which he believes partly contributes to a large proportion of the population living in slums. Kwadwo made headlines after the death of his father in a squalid and vermin-infested flat in the Eastfields estate in South London, bringing Europe's largest housing association, Clarion, to account. He said, "I've spoken to thousands of tenants from all corners of the UK, including Scotland, and they feel forgotten about. Social housing hasn't been prioritised for years. We need to look at housing and rental as a necessity, not just a way of accumulating wealth. People should not be living in destitution in Scotland in 2024. We must shift the focus on building housing to social housing, reforming from a bottom-up approach to make sure we're improving the lives of the suffering worst first. The reality is, housing in the UK is built on terrible foundations." At the Share annual conference on March 15th and 16th, housing sector staff and committee/board members from across Scotland will gather for networking opportunities and workshops. The conference, held at Glasgow's Grand Central Hotel, will feature discussions led by senior housing Scottish housing regulator staff, investment experts, damp and mould specialists and housing association leaders. Darrell McIntosh, chief executive with Shear, said, "Quadjo has real first hand of the damage that unsafe, inadequate housing does. His experience brings everything home and I'm sure he will have delegates captivated. The reality is, housing associations are under immense pressure. Adequate training and meaningful professional development have never been more vital. That can range from the more physical elements of looking after homes to the softer skills required to support tenants to overcome their challenges. All of these areas will be explored in depth at our annual conference and we're really looking forward to having the leading lights in this sector together to share experience and wisdom." And that report was by Santhaya Suresh. From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 12th of March, from the news section, MSPs slam cladding issue delays, report is unattributed. Opposition MSPs have hit out at the Scottish Government over delays in tackling the potentially unsafe cladding on high-rise buildings, with ministers being told that their lives are at risk as a result. Ministers came under fire as the Scottish Parliament prepares to debate new legislation aimed at dealing with potentially flammable cladding on blocks of flats today, but the Holyrood Committee has already complained that progress has been slow. The Scottish Government had introduced a cladding remediation programme in the wake of the Grenfell Tower fire in London 2017, which killed 72 people, with cladding on the high-rise block said to have been contributed to the spread of the blaze. But a report by the local government, Housing and Planning Committee last month revealed that of the 105 buildings on this programme, only one had any remediation works carried out, with mitigation work being done at one other building. In contrast, it said that as of December 2023 in England, more than two-fifths of affected buildings, 42%, had works either started or completed, with 1,608 premises included in this total. Commenting ahead of today's debate on the Housing, Cladding Remediation, Scotland Bill, Labour Housing spokesperson Mark Griffin said, "Not only are these delays seriously negligent, but they're also putting the lives of people at risk." And that article was unattributed. From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 12th of March, from the news section, work starts on drug consumption room, report by Stuart Patterson. Glasgow's Safer Drug Consumption Facility will have room for up to 20 people when it opens later this year. Work has started on converting the premises in the East End into space for 8 injection booths and an aftercare slash recovery area for another 12. Construction is scheduled to last 24 weeks, but it is hoped that that can be brought forward and the service in operation this summer. The Council and Health Board, through the Integrated Joint Board, has earmarked funding for the works and the Scottish Government committed to the revenue costs of the operation. Alan Casey, the councillor in charge of addictions policy, said that this is a huge step forward in how the city deals with addictions. He said, "This is a huge milestone in the journey to opening a safer consumption facility." On the 24-week timescale, he added, "We're working to reduce that to open as soon as possible. This summer is the ambition and aim." The facility has been at least 8 years in the making and became possible following a decision by the Lord Advocate that no one would be prosecuted for using drugs in the centre. Casey said, "I'm overjoyed to have managed to get to this stage. To see work begin is promising. It means we are moving to a more progressive policy for people with addiction. Recognising there are many other services required to deal with Glasgow's drug problem and record drug death levels," he added. "It's about how we offer the other services available when they're using the space, the relevant support services when they're ready to start reducing harm or coming off drugs. It's not going to fix the issue overnight." The councillor said, despite the city's budget being cut and resources scarce, it was something that Glasgow can't afford not to do. He added, "It comes at a cost. The Scottish Government has committed to the revenue costs and we have committed funds. We have made the case so it is hard not to give funding. We have made the case for saving lives. You can't put a price on that. The manager of the Alcohol and Drug Recovery Service said, the building has been designed with the needs of those who will use it at the forefront of the planning. New facilities have been added, including a shower room and a clothing store, as well as a smoking shelter outside. Lynn McDonald, service manager, said, we have made changes after speaking to the reference group. The aftercare area will be a cafe-style space where people can interact with others or engage with staff. She said the aim is to move more people onto other services to help with their drug use. McDonald added, we know there are a large number of people who do not engage with services. Give them a safe place to come by building trust at their own pace. We hope this is a route into services. We have existing services on this site. We have the complex needs team and the community teams. She said money has not been diverted from other services, adding, this is about expanding what we already do. This is a tiny part of a much bigger picture. It's an entry point. It is not a problem we are creating. The problem is already in the community. A member of the Women's Reference Group said, as a member of Glasgow Alcohol and Drugs Partnership, Women's Lived and Living Experience Reference Group, I have been involved in the planning and design of the SDCF. Our views were heard and recommendations taken on board in order to make the space welcoming and more uncomfortable but still practical. No one can better understand the needs of people in addiction than those who have experienced it themselves. I feel privileged to be part of this important development and look forward to being included as it continues to develop. And that was a report by Stuart Patterson.
Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 12th of March, from the opinion section. Independence is our golden ticket to escaping Westminster. Disappointment, bewilderment, frustration. All feelings you might have when you think about the state of UK politics, or if you were a family that attended the viral Willy Wonka immersive experience in Glasgow earlier last week. It was an event that had us all shocked with scenes of a post-war chocolate factory, terrified children and stunned parents. Much like the farce that is Westminster, I can assure you it isn't the only circus currently in town. If you are one of the families left feeling shortchanged after the event, I have a horrible feeling that the Chancellor's budget announcement this afternoon will not ease any of your worries. We are in an unfortunate position where the Willy Wonka experience isn't the only way people in Glasgow are being conned. And as the Westminster Circus rages on, I wouldn't count on the Chancellor pulling out any stops to help households that are desperately crying out for support. That is why, ahead of the budget later this afternoon, the SNP will be calling for the reversal of Tory welfare cuts, an essentials guarantee for universal credit, and for the UK government to match the Scottish Government's Scottish child payment at a UK-wide level. The reality is that life for so many people is less chocolate river and more a tsunami of worry and despair when it comes to mortgage repayments, putting food on the table, and being able to buy the essentials, no thanks to the UK's government inaction. Most unsurprisingly is that we are now in a position where both the Labour Party and the Tories support the removal of capping bankers' bonuses while opting to maintain the two-child cap and its associated rape clause. The truth is, whichever ringleader, be it Keir Starmer or his Tory counterpart, is left in charge of the Westminster Circus come the next election, for people in Scotland it will be much of the same continuation of chaos and economic pain. Fundamentally, we are in a situation where both the UK's two main political parties actively support callous policies like the two-child cap and rape clause, and only my SNP colleagues and I have had enough of a backbone to say true to our principles and stand up for what is right. Much of this can't be said for the Labour Party. My colleagues and I have shown time and time again that only we are able to deliver a strong voice that stands up for the values of people in Scotland, against the backdrop of a Westminster establishment whose priorities are not the same as ours. But who knows, in the Chancellor's world of pure imagination, we can only hope that he does not draw inspiration from Charlie Bucket's four grandparents, having to share a bed due to dire poverty, and instead reverses his party's cruel bedroom tax. I won't hold my breath, though. As a result of 14 years of Westminster-induced austerity, for people across Glasgow, and indeed the rest of Scotland, life is far from the marvels and joy of Wonka's chocolate factory, and more like the bleak warehouse we saw on social media last week. At this point, it seems that independence is our golden ticket when it comes to escaping the immersive experience that is the chaos of Westminster. This is an article by David Linden. Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 12th of March, from the Lifestyle section. Time capsule tenement is hidden in the heart of Glasgow. Built in their thousands to accommodate the booming Victorian population, the tenement epitomises ordinary, everyday life in Glasgow. The red and blonde sandstone bricks have become synonymous with the city. While many were demolished in the mid-20th century to make way for more modern housing, many have also survived. The interiors have changed significantly over the years, except in one time capsule tenement on Buccleuch Street. At first glance, it looks like any other red sandstone tenement in Garnet Hill. But when you step inside, the tenement house appears exactly as it was in the earliest 20th century. With gaslights, box beds, an old stove, horsehair chairs and even a bar of soap that has turned black from years of use. The tenement house is a museum showcasing everyday life in a Gleska tenement. The rooms have been restored and preserved with its original fittings to emulate a typical Victorian tenement home, known for its large apartment-style structure and communal entrance. While the Buccleuch Street property was seen as a more luxurious abode with four rooms, gas lighting and an inside toilet, not all tenements were as enjoyable to live in. Toilets and washrooms were shared by all the residents, and living so closely together in this way often created slum conditions in the tenements. This, along with poor maintenance, led to the mass demolition of many tenement buildings in places such as the Gorbals. At the height of its overcrowding, around 100,000 people are thought to have lived in 1 square kilometre of the Gorbals. Practically all the tenements were cleared in the 60s to make way for tower blocks. This particular tenement on Buccleuch Street was home to Agnes Tuward and her mother. She kept all her furniture, personal belongings and even everyday household items that many of us would throw away, like toiletries and cooking utensils. With a waste-not-want-not attitude adopted during the war, many of the food items in Miss Tuward's cupboards, such as spices, were used for years. There remains a large collection of jam jars, as she used to make her own, including a jar of plum jam she made in 1929 and an unopened orange marmalade dating from 1941. All of this contributes to the museum today, giving us an authentic image of what life was like in a typical tenement. Beyond Miss Tuward's living quarters, the neighbouring apartment is home to a vast collection of her handwritten letters. While the home aptly represents city living in the era, the decision to use Miss Tuward's home was a conscious choice, as she lived and worked independently at a time when it was unusual for a woman to do so. Miss Tuward and her mother moved into the house in 1911, and she worked as a shorthand typist during the war, while her mother was a dressmaker. Initially, she thought she would have to give up her job when the men returned from war. Remarkably, she was kept on until she retired at the age of 73. The idea to immortalise Miss Tuward's life in a museum came after her death in 1973, when her family lawyer and his niece, Anna Davidson, thought it would be a waste to sell or change her perfectly maintained home. It eventually went into the care of the National Trust of Scotland, who look after it and run it as a much-loved Glasgow tourist attraction every day. Have you been back in time to the tenement house? This is an article by Rebecca Newlands.
That concludes this week's edition of the Glasgow Times podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at TuneReview and to tell your friends about our service.